number of principal bundles with the slab connection at the location.
Okay.
Four TSD coupled and then one regulating
maxwell. Oh, yeah. Yeah, two is with some regulating term.
I don't have to wait anymore for
an hour. Yeah, sure. Okay, so I'll stop here. So Sung Se is an expert in condensed matter theory, so I think most of the things might be boring to him. But other people, you might not know much, or you would like to know about condensed matter side of transaminase. So I will just follow this outline. So basically, today I will talk about transaminase theory with only an abelian gauge group. So I won't talk about non-abelian case. We can write down the form, but I'm not going to discuss the detailed physics. So they may not be really relevant. So the point here today, I will first introduce transaminase term from more condensed matter side, and I will say how this whole quantum Hall effects experiment phenomena can give a hint that in 2+1 dimension, we will have a natural transaminase term to explain the physics of a whole conductance, a whole resistivity. And I'll also talk about the unusual statistics in 2+1 dimension, basically can be sort of as adding the transaminase term to a particle, which induce certain kind of a Hadamard bone phase, and which will introduce a statistical angle that can explain the anionic statistics beyond the older bosonic or fermionic statistics. And the other side is I try to say something about effective field theory using this Hamiltonian approach, how to integrate out the long wavelength degree of freedom, which can derive transaminase theory. But just ghostly, the idea, I'm not going to detail right on the mathematics. And I'll connect how transaminase theory is a topological field theory, and then some extra properties. And H theory will connect it to the ground state degeneracy I'll talk about later. But the point for ground state degeneracy, just saying that we know the topological field theory means that many things. But one thing is that the dynamics of this system basically has Hamiltonian zero in the sense that there's basically a large gap away from the ground states, and there's no low energy modes like gapless modes around these ground states.
So in the sense that the states one considers in the theory are like those in this.
So the state
level.
Yes. So we won't go to this higher energy level away from the ground states. So the really physical things on the ground states, like how many how many energy states on the lowest energy level we have, and which means how many ground states there are, and that's the non-trivial.
Those are field configurations of transaminase theory. The other ones are physical but not included in transaminase theory.
I think the higher energy level can be described by transaminase theory basically just describes this the physics in lowest energy level. Yeah. I mean, the high entry level, you can think about there's a large gap. So basically, you know, the physics is, we care about is just the ground states. But they still have some interesting property like non-trivial statistics. And you might add some other term beyond transignment term, like external term, external gauge field, coupled to transignment, and you still can have some experimental observation. But what I'm trying to say is that the transignment theory basically should tell you something related to topological property of this state. And that means that, first of all, they can be ground state degeneracy in the sense the lowest energy level have different ground states. So just like simple harmonic oscillator normally just has one ground state. And the transignment theory, in a sense, can have many ground states. And I will try to derive these facts by using several ways, but most approach are field theory. And the first way I will just add in a Maxwell regulating term, which is the so F wedge Hodge dual F, just F squared term, and or just purely from without Maxwell term, just from transignment topological term. And now using some techniques, the Gouldian's ages together to get the ground state degeneracy. And in a sense, there are some relation between boundary and the bulk. I'll talk about this. And I'll comment the using similar techniques, I can also compute the ground state degeneracy for BF theory or higher dimensional, on a higher dimensional space. And I think since remind me your name again.
Hillary.
Yeah, Hillary, exactly. Yeah. So Hillary is more a quantum information based person. So I would just say that the ground state degeneracy, you are familiar in this Torrico side, basically, it also can be described by transignment theory. For example, Z2 Torrico is can be described by mutual transignment theory with a form basically goes at B partial C plus C B, with B and C both are one form, basically. And yeah, let's Lagrangian. I can derive the ground state degeneracy from this action. There's a bracket in here. Okay. All right. So the first thing is that from the experimental side, what we had is that the exact time I forget, but it's 1980 sometime. So people try to see this phenomena that if I apply a strong magnetic field at low temperature to a 2+1 dimensional electron gas, I think gallium arsenide is the material people observe mostly in quantum hole. And what we had is that if we increase the magnetic field and then try to detect the so-called this hole resistivity rho xy, then the phenomena is that it, at the low B is linear-like, and then there will be some plateau. I just draw the rough shape like this. So there are some plateau means there are some quantized value here. And if we want to derive the phenomena for this theory, then we will just think about, let's say that in high school physics, we know there are some balance between the electric force QE and QVB. So let's write this electric charge. And we want to know the value, the ratio between rho xy is basically just the ratio between E and J. And this value basically will relate it to the magnetic field And the V can be substituted as current J by the density multiplied by EV. So in the end, the result we get is basically this is, it can be reorganized as some fundamental constant multiplied by the number of unit flux of respect to this flux unit value over the number of a particle on particle density. So the
classical Hall effect that you get when you draw this graph much.
Yeah, so classically we will just get a linear behavior as you see rho proportional to B. But what we will observe is there are some quantized value at a strong B, basically.
They are
quantized value. So which means classically this doesn't work in this place, in this region. So but we know that in 2+1 dimension there are Landau level in the sense that if we apply magnetic field in 2+1 electron gas, you know this just consider free particle picture, we know that they are basically energy level will be quantized in the sense the energy density will only locate some energy level. So the quantum physics in this picture may have some help to explain this. But the detail of this story, of course, of this plateau is not simple as just a pure quantum physics. So with this picture, you can explain. In the sense that actually, I think the detail for this explanation of this plateau, you need to include some consideration of a disorder and the impurity. You can think about if I only have energy densities, the number density locates on certain energy, then my plateau basically might just has small pieces of value detect. So I won't see that this plateau such in such a shape. I might see something more like more flat in the sense that if I only really locate on some value, I think this won't be observed. So I'm saying that the detail of this plateau actually related to impurity in the sense that the number density has some shape which has some extended region which is related to the Landau level in the free particle picture, but there is still some part which has localized the density states. So of course, I'm not going to the detail of this explanation of the plateau, but I'm saying the quantized value is related to the physics we are in for. So now we can think about what's the kind of physics we can use to derive the phenomena like this. So let's rewrite this relation in terms of density. The density of this electron gas. So the relative relation from here is J is sigma y. Sigma E. Okay. And one can derive actually if we consider in 2+1 dimension, the J is like a term of density, the current. And in 2+1 dimension, we can write J mu as some whole, this is sigma, I think. Sorry. With some sigma. And then if we want to write some invariant term, the natural term we will think about is just F mu new term. So this term basically is just F01, F02 with the electric field. So the correspondent term here for the density will basically be B field, which is F12 term. So in 2+1 dimension, we can think about the B field applied in this direction. It's like a field stress component, which is basically right in terms of 0, 0, 0, and then
E1, E2, and B.
And there are three components. It's the B field along Z direction. The physical things, this equation also implies that they are, you can think about the applied B field at a certain value give an incompressible fluid states with certain density. And the overall equation one can write down is basically J is equal to sigma epsilon partial A. And I can write this component more clearly. Okay. And in terms of effective physics, one can think this current need to be conserved. So I want to have some relation such that the partial mu j mu is equal to zero. And the natural term, the natural way in 2+1 dimension is that I consider j mu as another term. This is like dj is equal to zero. So I can write this as some differential of some form, which can be regardless introduce another effective gauge field. And later on, I'll introduce this one is related to the statistical gauge field for the second remark I want to make for transignment term. So if I write this in this way and make this current to be a conserved value, then I want to write down the effective Lagrangian such that there is an equation motion of this term. This equations, then the Lagrangian will basically has this form.
Can you pull the board up?
Yes, yes. Okay. And of course, we can have other.
What is little a?
A little a is the effective gauge field. In a sense that I want to make this current conserved. So I here didn't introduce the phenomena for this J mu, but I say I want to have this current conserved. I naturally write this in 2+1 dimension as some effective. This actually is a statistical gauge field. In the later, I'm just going to talk about this right now. But the point here is that I want to have this J. So you can think about this big A is basically external gauge field. The one you apply is magnetic field. It's like a U1 external gauge field. But this little a is the statistical gauge field. This is the one that introduced the Aharonov bone flux to particle, which will change the statistics of a particle. But this derivation simply is just from a phenomenological point of view. I want to have some whole effect physics.
So in the first equation, the current is determined by this external gauge field,
This is external.
So that determines the current, does it? When you have this external can determine the current in the material.
Yeah, but with the derivative, it's a field stress anyway. Yes. So the question is.
So then, why doesn't it follow automatically the charge conservation equation from that? So if you apply B mu to that equation for the current, then.
Yeah.
It vanishes automatically, no?
Yeah, that's true. That's true, yeah.
The first equation is the first law as the equation motion. The second equation is this just equivalent something, representation something.
So the second equation applies?
Yeah, the second equation is just like that you use another field variable to represent the J mu. The first question is the consequence of the classical field theory due to the polar dynamical steeper mu.
Right. Yeah, this is equation of motion, and this is a way to relate this current as another gauge field. I think it's internal gauge field.
But is it the current in the same physical situation? I mean, when the current is determined by this external gauge field, you can write little a as basically equal to capital A.
If you derive, they are not exactly the same. So the thing is that when I write this way, basically this means that I have an external gauge field coupled to this current, which effectively write down as degree of freedom of some statistical gauge field. But I can add other term coupled to this A. So the other current, for example, if I want to describe this as statistical gauge field, then this J mu can be regarded as quasi-particle. So
which ones are the dynamical fields in this Lagrangian?
Yeah, the big A is external gauge field. It's like the one you apply, and the little a is the one that describes the degree of freedom inside this electron gas. But of course, I didn't derive this from the Hamiltonian of the interaction of from the electrons. But I will try to say something in the third point, effective field theory.
So I guess maybe the point is that in the first equation, J is actually the expectation value of some current field, whereas the second equation is basically field identity, not expectation value. So just change your value of dynamical value from current into some.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the first equation, that J is indeed expectation value of the dynamical value.
Okay.
So in that Lagrangian, is J mu then just
shorthand
for? Dynamical field is A.
Yeah.
And capital A is?
External gauge field, yeah. You apply.
What about J?
Well, you can change, of course. What?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, just something you apply. And this is statistical gauge field. I'll say.
In a Lagrangian, then this J mu is? A shorthand notation for another term?
Oh, the other quasi-particle, like the one coupled to the internal gauge field, or statistical gauge field.
Is it dynamical also? Or?
Dynamical means time-dependent, or what's the dynamical meaning?
No, in a sense that you can derive the other Lagrange equations for that field. You vary that field when you derive.
You can derive equation motion. Yeah, basically. I guess some say is saying that I should put a like an expectation value for maybe for both sides, I think. Okay, yeah. Let's see. Okay, so. Okay, so from this Lagrangian, I'll just connect to the second part I want to say about statistical gauge field. If I do variation and then try to rewrite this effective. Try to realize this Lagrangian in terms of little a. And what I will get is basically, and if I couple this a to some density, I'll call this a quasi-particle density, coupled to this internal gauge field. Then what I get is j is equal to 2 pi epsilon partial a. Huh? Oh, this little gauge, this internal gauge field.
I'm touching on
certain equations, but
no, no, no.
I have no idea what they mean 10 minutes later.
Okay, so I'm going to explain this, JMU. Yes. Or if there are better way to say this, if Pen, you know, you can just interrupt. That's fine. So so folks, I can add other higher order term, Maxwell term, but I say if I want to see how this internal or statistical gauge field has anything to do with this system, then I can couple this to some degree of freedom inside this electron gas, and they should be related to some related to the particle degree of freedom inside this electron gas, and I'll call this quasi particle. For the reason later on, I'll find out the statistics may not be bosonic or fermionic. So this is the result.
Okay, can we start with what your Hamiltonian is? Like historic codes, I've seen as far as the Hamiltonian, which is defined in terms of Chekhov process.
Right? Yes.
And then Kitaev writes down a handful of lines and then a chain of factor and
input. Yes.
Right. No idea how it got from Hamiltonian to this thing has anomic statistics. Then, well, once I got as far as this thing has anomic statistics, then I can see how to do the other stuff, right?
Okay, let's see.
Less, right? But, you know, as far as I'm concerned in this stuff, there's a yawning gap between this is the Hamiltonian gibberish, now we have anomics.
Okay. That may be hard to directly relate the Z2 torical Hamiltonian to the Lagrangian description here. But I think there's a good reference might be helpful. I think the way to relate the Z2 torical to this description is that I can just say that so the Z2 torical, if you write down the Hamiltonian, you can tell the statistics there basically has a 1, E, and M, and epsilon. And with the statistic, you know that
that's topological charges after you've done several steps to get from the Hamiltonian.
Well, that's totally fine, but I'm saying that it's not a simple thing to directly relate the Hamiltonian of this torical directly with this A and B operator to this Lagrangian. I'm going to talk about Trin-Simon theory, but I can show.
Well, earlier on in your talk, you said there was a relationship between the two torical.
Yes, but I'm saying that statistically, the statistics, the fractional statistics will be the same. The statement people believe is that basically one can consider mutual Trin-Simon theory, and of course I'm going to talk about this very soon. That if you write down the mutual Trin-Simon theory with that Lagrangian, and I'm going to show the statistics, how to count the particle statistics, then one can find out that basically mutual Trin-Simon and Z2 torical has the same statistics. And there's a paper by.
Maybe we can get this
later. Yeah, we can get this later. This is a bit different from my approach. But I think Xiaogang and Michael Levine and what's his name? Su Peng Ko, right? There's a paper they try to relate this. But still, it's not a direct derived from Hamiltonian.
This is something that annoys the hell out of me about condensed matter physics, right? When you go to the papers.
Yeah.
Here's the Hamiltonian.
Yeah.
Yawning gap, therefore,
Yeah. Here's
the behavior.
Yeah.
Right? Now, after you have seen 2 dozen papers like this.
Yeah.
And none which fill the gap.
Yeah.
And there's poorly defined block normalization procedures that also produce various results that don't seem to be justified. After a bit, you start to suspect that nobody knows how to do that step, and they're all mimicking each other.
Yeah, that's possibly be true, but I guess,
to the point when a consistent absence of key steps in an argument starts to set off my bullshit defense. And I'm 100% with the mathematicians on this one. Show me the derivation.
So, usually, you know,
somebody needs to say it.
So here the approach is that I think Zhuge is trying to use this as an input.
Yeah, sure.
So, here's an experiment. where it's an incompressible state where density is not with knowledge.
Okay.
And there's a whole value state.
What do you mean by incompressible? Because this takes place in a way where it's a very solid object.
So rho is fixed by knowledge.
Right.
So as far as knowledge is fixed, then rho is fixed.
Okay, so we're not talking rigid and incompressible as in I put this thing in a vise and squeeze it.
It's the same thing because you the system has a gap, therefore it cannot compress without adding energy to the system.
Right. Well, I mean, it's a solid object.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, I see papers saying, oh yeah, this system, not this system, but some system or other, when you compress it, it starts exhibiting the same superconductivity. Right, so when I see the phrase compressible fluid, I think somebody takes a sample, puts it in the vise, as in thin, diamond anvils type thing or whatever, and physically crushes it, and then sees that it changes the behavior.
So the question is, can you compress it without adding energy?
Well, it's a solid object, you're going to have to add energy. I have to get to QNC by 1:30.
Yeah.
Right, so I'm a bit time-limited. But, if you mean something other than put it in a vise, you'd be saying simply that your resistivity is strictly a function of the B field and it won't change once you change the B field. That would be.
That's the density, not the resistivity.
Rho. Rho is a density,
yeah.
Sometimes rho is used for the resistivity.
Zubin is using this as an experimental input and to construct an effective
field
that you produce that. So here he's not deriving that Lorentz from Hamilton. He's guessing the right Lorentz that he would produce that. So that's, but in principle, you could start from some microscope chemical and people have.
Yeah, people have tried.
But here, this is not.
Yeah. Yeah, the idea is that we have some rich physics in 2 plus 1 dimension, and Torrico is a familiar example that Hilary familiar with, and people are trying to really do something to, say more about these connections, but I think most of people are satisfied at this level. We have a Z2 Torrico, and we have a generalized model of string net, and turns out this string net model can really characterize lots of different types of Chern-Simon theory, and to which level we can use direct derivation from effective Hamiltonian. As you say, I agree. Actually, in the literature, I don't think there is a very clean way to derive this, but maybe that's a good project.
If they say ansatz, then I'll forgive them provided they show me how it works, but they don't even do that.
Yeah, I agree. I can just mention there's a paper I'm going to mention in the point 3. Since we are here, I just briefly mention, I'm sorry to cite this, but this is a famous paper by Kivos and Hansen and Zhang. In that paper, they try to write down the Hamiltonian for this electron gas. And yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. No problem. It's Kivos and. Oh, okay. Oh, that's fine. I'll just organize this way. I can check the year later. But the point is that it will be good that if we can see the effective Lagrangian derived from a low energy Hamiltonian, and one can expect the Hamiltonian can be described by some fermionic or bosonic degree of freedom of field. Fine. And coupled to external gauge field. And in order to have some non-trivial statistics, there is statistical gauge field. And there are interactions between this density of this matter. I just effectively write down the result. Yeah, but my point today is not to be rigorous, derive things. I just want to give you an idea of what's the Trans-Simon theory has to do with condensed matter physics. So if we have this little a, basically, I want to introduce a statistical degree of freedom. So if I, just for convenience, I write down as some theta over pi, which in the end will relate to statistical angle, then I basically can write down the statistical angle, but statistical gauge field in terms of a density phi at r prime, and which effectively introduce, you know, just like a normal way we have the relation between current to gauge field J to the big A. I here have this density introduce some statistical degree of freedom to this gauge field. And this in the end can show related to a Aharonov bone flux. It's a Aharonov bone flux. So the way to see this basically is that in order to, we know that if a particle basically is around a flux phi B, then if the particle wind around this flux, we will have a wave function changed by a phase related to this Aharonov bone phase. And in the sense that if this flux is attached to a particle, then this is like winding the particle around the other. So this phase will relate to the statistical angle, right? So if my flux is inserted to this particle, and this actually can be seen already from here, because my J, as I say, is the internal degree of freedom of
do
particle.
Do you understand that this other particle is the source of the flux, creates the flux?
I think you can think in that way. But this is just a quasi-particle degree of freedom,
yeah,
and already with flux. If I neglect the external gauge field for a moment, just for the convenience, I want to see the relation. So I say neglect this for a moment, now this doesn't count. The effective action I derive, the equation of motion has this relation. So this relate the density of quasi-particle to a B field, statistical B field, right? So this B field basically can be created by this flux inserted on the quasi particle. And I say that the way to think about the phase, statistical phase, basically is like exchange to particle. And you can also do like exchange particle by winding once. There might be a factor of two, but I just say that the statistical angle is related to this EI phi B. This phi B is basically a B, not from the external gauge field, but from this little a. And of course, we can easily integrate this, get this phi BA as from the integrate the curl of this little a and some area degree of freedom. And what we get, of course, is a theta over pi term. So, and
in fact,
I think there's one of them. Anyway,
if
yeah,
you
go
want to change it, if you want to study the statistical transmutation, you just only winding a half circle.
Yeah.
You don't need one.
Yeah. So let's say, yes. So there's a factor of two or something here. Yeah. There's a factor of two.
So there's a kind of bone effect for the flux created by the other quasi particle is how you get the anionic statistics.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Okay, so basically I briefly relate the Hamiltonian in this form and to this Lagrangian. And maybe Penn knows this story more. So the way they derive effective Lagrangian from this Hamiltonian, the microscopic Hamiltonian, is that there's a relation between A and the density as I say, curl A in the end, curl A is in the end is related to the density. I mean, we can also see this directly from here, the quasi particle density. But in my in the language in Hamiltonian is the density of this phi field.
So,
in bosons in their paper, but I think maybe you still can do fermion thing. But here I write boson, that's true. Let me just briefly write in this way. I don't want to get every factor right. Just the this is the curl A is phi square. It's the density. So what one can think about to introduce the effective Lagrangian is introduce a Lagrangian multiplier. This is one of the component A0. That's the way I think Zhang and the Kivosen they did. But I don't think it's a clean story. And multiply by the constraint of this equation of motion. So this term arises as a transignment term, basically. That's a story I learned from effective Hamiltonian approach. I don't know whether there's a better way to do this. I read their paper, basically, the result is they say that they try to make some efforts to derive directly from microscopic Hamiltonian, but I don't think they did this.
And so it's not just me, there really is a huge logical
gap. Yeah, so I don't know whether any of you know, is there a better way to derive?
I say,
do you know? Like, really rigorously derive a transignment term. But I guess the way to do this is to integrate degree of out degree.
Yeah,
practically.
There is no logical gap, there's a technical gap.
Yeah, technical gap.
Well, what do you mean as the distinction between a technical gap and a logical gap? I mean, is there.
Oh, you mean a non-abelian, right? That's non-abelian. I can do that if you like, but what's the point? I'm not going to mention too much.
And then, when you say integrate out,
I can't hear you.
I used to be cavalier about mathematical details, and then I realized that actually there's real physics working.
That's fine. Yeah, there's certainly many things is not clear, but that's the reason we are here, because we can spend more time to figure out. Yeah, I think there are too many, you know, burden in the history. But I guess we are trying to learn some lesson to understand, I think. As far as we can understand something, they'll be fine. And depends on what you believe in. So I think this story at least has a connection. And I'm going to, I think I already mentioned the first part. And comment on transignment basically is quite easy in the sense that if I only have a pure transignment term, I can show first that this is topological. So the normal way. this. So it's topological in the sense that it does not directly depend on the metric. So when you write down like Maxwell term, there's a G mu nu term.
So this is the action now.
Yeah, this is the action for U1 abelian, U1 level K transignment theory. And if normally the Maxwell term has a G mu nu when you try to contract the F mu nu term. But here there is no G mu nu term, like rise the or lower the index. And especially this epsilon basically also absorb this the term with the determinant of this G, square root of determinant of G, into this alternating tensor. So basically what I'm trying to say is that when you change the coordinates or change the metric by a fluctuation or slight fluctuation, what you get basically is the same transignment form. And there's no explicit metric dependent. And the other, this is transignment form, U1K transignment theory. U1 level K is a U1 symmetry. So U1 symmetry just means A go to A plus D lambda. Lambda is a zero form, A is a one form. Then this basically, if the manifold living, if the theory living on a manifold without boundary, then this is a gauge invariant. But of course, if there is a boundary, then there will be a H term on the boundary. So yeah, so
apply this gauge transformation, yeah. The term that the new term we get is integral over d lambda, which
exactly. So they will get some d of lambda wedge dA, I think. Maybe there's no.
No, it's just the lambda which
delay. Yeah, I think it's easier to write this way. I think it's epsilon mu nu rho lambda mu partial nu a rho, I think. With a partial here, partial mu. So this term, if there's a boundary, then this term will be the term arises on the boundary, and that will be important in the age state physics.
And is it obvious that when there is no boundary, that the integral vanishes?
Yeah, sure, because there is no this term. You know, you have no boundary, or you can,
yeah,
but it's a low dimensional.
Oh, wait, shouldn't this the new act on lambda only?
No, acts on these things. So. There's a term lambda partial mu a, which is automatic zero, because mu nu basically.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
okay.
I integrate bypass.
Okay. Yeah.
Anyway.
And this is what, I mean, it would help if you could write down next to these expressions.
Okay, good,
what
good.
They are.
So this
short-term memory probably drops the name as soon as you write the next equation.
So this is the bulk actions. If I do a U1 transformation, a local gauge transformation, then I can derive basically the code, let's see, code this as delta L, then the only term survive is this term. And I say if there's, the manifold has no boundary, which is a closed manifold, then basically this term doesn't arise.
That's specifically a boundary term.
Yeah, this is a boundary term. And if there's a boundary, this will relate to the age state physics. And there will be a chiral boson theory. That will be related to the ground state degeneracy. I want to talk a bit, but let me try to speed up. So I say this basically is topological for two reasons, that one can see variation on G mu nu basically give zero, which means energy momentum tensor is zero. So the component T00 is an energy term, which means the energy, the dynamics we describe has all the same energy level. If there is no extra Maxwell term, of course, I say pure transignment. And So this is.
Which thing in there is the Maxwell term?
Oh, I say there's no Maxwell term. So it's just vary with this transimon, bulk transimon term. It's basically just zero. And of course, if you try to derive a Hamiltonian by the usual canonical construction, I do variation with respect to the coordinates. In here, this case will just be the gauge field, and vary with respect to the conjugate momentum of this gauge field, then there will be time derivative of this gauge field. And then divide by L. It turns out this will be explicitly zero. One can show this. And the reason is simply because the conjugate momentum of A1 will just be A2. And one can write down this explicitly. Yeah, it's basically. And I'll just say that, what else? Let's see. And of course, the property of topological is, I say, that since we have a Hamiltonian zero, the thing we really care is, for example, what's the topologically non-trivial things. Then that's the story studied both in this community in high energy string theory or condensed matter. And Xiaogang is the one who proposed this as a topological order, in the sense, if we put these states on a non-trivial topological manifold, such as torus, then the question is, what's the better way to describe this dynamics when the Hamiltonian is zero? And the answer turned out to be, we can see the ground state degeneracy is non-trivial. It depends on the genus of the surface. And I think it's quite pleasant to have several ways to derive this. So the first way, as I say, is adding a regulating term. Actually, I think it will be good later on if we can make a connections from the earlier story topological field theory discussion. If we can compute some direct values like ground state degeneracy, they'll be fine. So I'm going to talk about ground state degeneracy. Let's see, I hope you can see this here. So the term we have, anyone know the answer for like U1K transimon theory, what's the ground state degeneracy if we put on the genus one, torus? Cecilia, do you know this? You don't know this? I mean, I think something in the pen, something you know. So.
Why would it depend on K?
Oh, it turned out it depends on K.
Why?
Yeah, so what's the intuition? Okay, so one intuition I had is that it's related to the fractionalized particle. For the label K transimon theory, it turns out that in the U1 case, of course, we don't have non-abelian anions. Everything is abelian, and the type of anion are exactly K types of anions. And one way you can think about K is the constant here. K can relate to the type of anions. Okay. Yes, K is integer. And K can be related to the type of anion. The number of type of anion.
Characterizes the Deering transimon theory of level K.
No idea what that means.
Okay, this is just a name. This is just a name. We just label, say there's a U1 symmetry, and K is just a subindex to label this Brown factor. So physically, K related to number of type anion, means fractionalized particle. It also related to the filling fraction of the this quantum Hall story. The filling fraction for this story is basically nu for the fraction between the flux. Where do I have this, things on the top? Where? Yeah, this here. So this basically is related to K. So I define this as 1 over nu. It's exactly turned out to be the label of a transimon theory, K.
So there's a whole family of these things, and it's like labeling topological genus or something.
Yes. Basically, just how powerful transimon theory can describe the quantized value of this plateau of the whole resistivity, as well as the number of type anions. And I say the intuition I have for T2 torus, the ground state unit is K. And the intuition I have is because this level K give K type of fractionalized anions. And later on, I will show you, I think just in 5 minutes, that if one put this Trans-Simon theory, which describe so-called topological order states on a cylinder, then one can think that if we insert a magnetic flux through this cylinder, then each unit of flux, basically phi b over h bar e, will transpose one unit of a fractionalized anion. And for k type of fractional anions means that the k multiply times of anions will give you an integer charge, an integral charge. So each unit of anion transpose turns out will switch ground states or topological order states. This story, of course, can be made more clear by if we want to think about this in terms of Z2 Toriko Z2 gauge theory. Actually, I just had a recent paper with Xiao Gang, so I can kind of promote a bit so that one can, because we have a different community, so I can just mention, I think the title is, I mean, the number is 12-12-4863. It's a paper with Xiao Gang. If we think about Trans-Simon theory, as I say, that the ground state degeneracy for this theory is K. If I consider ground state degeneracy on a torus K, on a cylinder. Okay, I can compute this. And the Trans-Simon theory, I should write down, it's not the U1K Trans-Simon, it's actually U1K cross U1K. And the form can be much more clearly if I write in terms of a two gauge field, B nu, partial nu zero, as I say in the very beginning. But of course, this is just a notation. It's kind of a way that we try to compute some physics, just a useful way we try to compute some physics. So until we get some physics, it doesn't really mean much. But now we have a physical properties we can detect, ground state degeneracy, count how many of them, which is not just mass, it's really powerful. And I'm telling you that I'm just going to show you by Lagrangian formulas and how to count ground state degeneracy for this theory. On the cylinder is K, and on the torus is K squared. And for more familiar torico, it's basically a Z2 torico, a Z2 gauge theory. In a sense, I need to pick K equal to 2 to match the statistics and everything. And of course, I can also use a model, which is a string net model by Xiao Gang again. And now I just briefly mentioned the intuition, why they are different ground states, K different type of ground states. So you can think about, if I want to label the Hilbert space on the ground states, there should be a K vector.
The other two terms, I think they sometimes cancel each other.
Oh yeah, it's plus, sorry. Yes, thanks. Yeah, it's the same term. So I can write K over 2 pi, but just more clear to write this in terms of, because,
double
term, just mutual. This isn't the terminology. Anyway, it's a mutual transimon or double transimon. So the torico, the story we had is, as Hillary mentioned, it's a very good point that we can write in terms of some plaque operator, and the operator on the vertex, and the story we had is that it turns out that if I want to put this system on a manifold with boundary like a cylinder, then it turns out that we will need to assign operators on the boundary, and these operators assigned can basically be one type, which people call rough. In a sense, I assign, for example, AV of these operators on the boundary, And the other type of boundary is BP, which assign the Plaquet operator on the boundary. So these two type of operator define two type of boundary. So in the end, we can actually change the type of boundary of a cylinder by assign either rough on two sides. So this is rough boundary. This is smooth, which I don't have a vertex operator on the end, smooth operator. Or maybe smooth on one side and the rough on the other side. Yes. Yes, different type of boundary, exactly. Different type of boundaries. And so the story is that if I have these type of boundaries, I can use the way people in quantum information, they try to count the code subspace on the ground states, and you can count how many degree of freedom on the logical operators, and how many constraint layer are if I basically have operator shares on the links, so they are overall constrained. The overall degree of freedom on the lowest energy state, of course, is just the ground state degeneracy. It turns out that, of course, I'm just saying that after computation, one can show this ground state degeneracy is 2. This will be 2, and this one will be 1. But counting degree of freedom is not physical enough. I can directly show you the answer by without doing computation. So the physical picture we have is actually, you can think about in the string picture is that this toricode has a Z string, which assign operator ends with this charge of this A operator. And the reason I say Z string is because this A is labeled by sigma Z of this poly matrix, and B is basically on the Plaquet, connects the links on the Plaquet with sigma x operator as x string. So if I have a two type of boundary, if I have a boundaries with the same type on two sides, basically I will get a Z string can connect associated with this vertex. I might you know switch load the correspondence, but the point is physics is the same. So I can have a Z string connect two sides. However, I cannot have an X string connect to psi. And by topological property, if I only have a one single number of, sorry, if I have only other number of a string, then basically there's no way I can make this string to be non-trivial, make to be trivial in the sense that the R number of string will survive here. So this is one kind of a ground state. The other is even number of string. In a sense, I can make even number string form a loop, and this can go inside. So this is another configuration. If I have an even number of string, so the type of string in this string net picture basically count two type of ground states in this picture, and there's one ground state for this. And of course, if I glue this together, one can get, you know. The ground state is 2 squared 4. So yeah, basically, I think as Sansei mentions that we have some kind of understanding between the relation between like a Chen Simon, you know, Lagrangian description, people more familiar with field theory. And we also have a Hamiltonian description. People are more familiar with this operators or algebra, and also stringness is also a good picture. And one can actually show this relation fit together. And I can explain more if you have interest, but I'll just briefly mention to end the story. Is it so far clear? It's okay. I mean, this picture basically fits well. I'll be happy to actually to maybe next time, maybe Toby yes, can help that how to compute ground state degeneracy from this functor point of view, the partition function. They might be more mathematical, but I would like to really compute something directly from this TQFT side. But today is more like an introduction because try to fill in everyone's background. So this different picture basically connects the field theory side or Hamiltonian side of using the simple string picture. And let me just briefly comment. The way to compute ground state degeneracy, the method as far as I know, The first two actually are related to the work by Shougang. Pen, do you know how to compute this? Ground state degeneracy. You know or no? You don't? Okay, good. So I'll just say, if I write down the Lagrangian for this theory, okay, and there are some gauge choices I can make. A normal way people make is a temporal gauge choice, which is the time component for A0 is 0. And as I say, there are some relation between A0, if it's 0, then you can regard this as some kind of Lagrange multiplier, and the equation of motion of this A0 will be a constraint, which will be the field stress F12, which is the A. Or just say partial 1 A2 minus partial 2 A1, the field stress is 0. So this will be a constraint. And the Lagrangian can be right in terms of A1 A2 dot minus A2 A1 dot and some factor. But the point is the K coefficient is still here. So there are different ways one can think how to this is totally non-trivial. What's the ground state degeneracy? How many ground states there are in this system? And turns out the idea one can do is that some people hold in, suffer a system. So this is a side story that if I put a particle on torus, insert with a magnetic flux outward, say a torus, identify this side, and this side, and then I insert the magnetic flux outside. Then, if the B return as some coefficient of a quantized value 2 pi k, then one can know that the Hamiltonian for this 2 plus 1 dimensional Hamiltonian is something like this, or some A field over 2m. And one can solve the this quantum mechanical. Go ahead, sorry.
You draw that torus with a B field going.
Go outward. So it's like a B field going outward.
Let's right. go. Okay, that's okay for a plane, but over a closed solid, you're picking up like a Gauss's law.
Once again, sorry. Gauss's law.
There are no magnetic monopoles, right?
Yes,
so
no.
If I have a field coming out by a certain number of. Plus quanta, it's going to go back in by a certain number of plus quanta.
Yeah, so here.
If B equals 0.
Yeah, here I think the story is not the magnetic flux insert is not a real physical phenomenon. So in nature, I think we don't have magnetic monopole as we know so far, but this is just like a thought experiment. We are just trying to solve a problem that. I'm trying to relay the story of counting ground state degeneracy of this quantum Lagrangian. If I quantize this, it's effectively related to a quantum mechanical problem of a particle moving on a torus with a magnetic field.
Right. Well, suppose you say, okay, I have a system of grids in square.
Yes.
Right, and there's some kind of modes and there's some kind of wave in the box fitting thing going on, which enforces periodic boundary conditions.
Yes.
Yes,
I don't know about
that. I'm happy with.
Yes.
Because it's not violating Gauss's law.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
You can draw it as a torus, but it's really disturbing if you do that with B field doing like a porcupine thing.
But this
you
is not the electromagnetic field, right? You have a different kind of dynamics, no? You have a different, total different Lagrangian, which is not the electromagnetic.
Yeah, so this is like.
Why are you calling it a magnetic field if it's not a magnetic field?
Yeah, so this is a generalized B field. Maybe just for convenience. So we just say this is
it's
not really EMBA.
It has monopoles, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's a monopole. There's a monopole. Exactly. There's a monopole. Exactly. So this is not an EMB field. This is just a B field. For the related story, I will just show as you see this K multiplied by this gauge field term of A look like this. If I identify A1, A2 as a coordinates of a direction of x and y basically is just like x y dot minus y x dot multiplied by k. right? So if I introduce a trans-Simon term, the Maxwell term, as you know, this will give you a quadratic term. The quadratic term in this gauge choice and this constraint will basically give you a kinetic term. So this will be a trans-Simon term, the Maxwell term. And this is simply, I introduced that in order to fit into the Hamiltonian picture of this and then trying to derive the ground state degeneracy. And I can take m go to zero limit in the very end. It doesn't affect the story. This is just a way to show ground state degeneracy. So I say this is like a picture of a particle moving on a magnetic field proportional to k, right? It's a Q V cross B term. And a B field, of course, is uniform. As you see, the coefficient is X and Y. You can easily choose a gauge of this artificial thought experiment B field as B by some A, some gauge. Yeah, B is actually uniform as B. Yeah, I know. If you write A as some KY, KX minus KY. Yeah, it's not the point. The point is B field basically is along the Z direction. And you can solve this Hamiltonian with a quantum mechanical wave function problem. And that describes this quantum mechanical wave function problem. Turns out that the wave function for this solution basically has a k times of, has a label L. So of course this will be a more technical calculation, but I tell you the result is that there will be a so-called Jacobi theta function show up in this story, and there's an extra label of L. I can write down the form. The form is a 2 pi x plus iy nk plus L. So this L label basically can change from 0 to k and with an integer value. And each value gives you a different wave function, and which means a different label for the ground states. And minus, let me write here. There's an extra term. Yeah, but the point is that this is just a cute way to think. You know, originally, it's kind of interesting that the original physical picture is that we have a particle, electron gas, many body particle electrons moving on this 2 plus 1D system, the electron gas. And effective Lagrangian has this form. And if we try to write down this gauge field in terms of this gauge choice, and the effective Lagrangian describe this theory turns out it's related to a quantum mechanical problem of a one body particle moving on a torus with a B field, effective B field of level K. I mean, this original picture is very similar to the original story of a 2 plus 1D electron gas, but the reason they are the same, I think, is not directly connected, but somehow there are just some funny things happen. One can solve the, I don't know whether there's a better understanding, but I find it's kind of amusing. You know what I mean? Because this is not the original electron gas. This is just the degree of freedom to describe this gauge field. Okay, but we don't necessarily need to introduce this regulating term. I think this is really physical things that we have a ground state K, and this physical things might maybe can be measured by experiment. I think it's pretty cool.
So here,
yeah.
So flux plays a role of coordinate, not a it's related, but F1 equals to zero condition.
Yes.
Implies that there's no flux in space, but you can still have flux going through the torus, right? I mean, real space torus. That flux plays the role of this coordinate.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So there are some subtle story. The reason I say subtle is I don't feel like I'm fully understand that how to relate this A to a coordinate of x, y with a compact torus. So this torus is not the same torus as the space torus we try to put it. So yeah. Yes, this. Yes, it's related to the U1 gauge field, which
x is roughly A1 times the size.
Yes. So the thing is, the level of understanding I have is that you can make a gauge transformation from A go to A plus some gauge transformation, U partial U. And if my space is on the torus, So there are different torus here. One torus is a space torus I put in, try to compute the ground states. The other torus is from the identification of the gauge field. And if my space is a torus, then turns out that the U can be transformed in a way identified by the coordinates of, let me put it this way. So the space torus is x1, x2. This is a space torus. Spatial torus, and the torus on the gauge coordinates is a1, a2, and I write it as x, y. Just for this, so they are different torus basically, and the way I understand why there is a torus on a1, a2 gauge field is that if I make a gauge transformation by a 2 pi multiple of L, say the size of this space torus, M1, L2, then because my space identify these two points, so yeah, the way I'm thinking is that So this gauge transformation also need to identify the two points on the space. And if I identify the gauge transformation for this, I'll find out A must be identified by A plus N times of X, M times of Y, basically. And A is A1, A2. Yeah, so this is the torus show up. That's what I understand, basically.
There's no X and Y.
This X and Y is just a parameters. Wait a second. Do I need to X, Y? No, there's, I think N, M, N is fine. Actually, I don't need X and Y. Just N and M. Yeah, that's right. N, M, N. Yeah, N, M, N. And then basically change this A by relabel by X and Y, just for convenience to view this as, the space on this gauge field. You mean A basically is identified, A1, A2 are identified by, A1, A2 divided by L is related to X and Y, right?
So A1
times
L1, A2 times L2.
Yes.
That's purely
scale, so yes. So basically the story is that because the torus is compact, and if I do a gauge transformation like this form, and these two points are identified, so I need to identify the gauge field in this way, under this gauge transformation, and which will make this, I don't know what's the proper way to say this, but you can think about the coordinates on the gauge field basically also need to be identified as a torus. Yeah. So this is different torus, but the point is that we also using this coordinates to compute ground state degeneracy from a picture of a quantum mechanical one particle problem, basically. Yeah. Yeah, so basically, so there are other ways that we don't need to introduce this term, but we don't have a nice picture like some kind of like one-body quantum mechanical problem. We just try to solve this as the way that
And then action up there, A1 and A2 are both functions of the space coordinates x1 and x2.
Yes.
So freelandness means that you can choose A1, A2 constant.
Yes.
So you have F1, 2 equals to 0. Therefore, you can just choose A1, A2 to be constant.
Yeah, so in the end, A1 only depends on T. It's a constant gauge view.
Why can you choose F1 equals 0?
You know, actually, I'm not sure how these constraints directly give this. I think this result is correct.
Choose
some gauge, possibly.
So, but F1 is independent of the gauge.
So that means F1 equals 0 means there's no magnetic field, basically. There's no field strength.
Right, but how do you get through that?
So only field coding with freedom is the global flux.
Oh, so the configuration space
is a space of flux. Space of flux that goes through two circle in points.
So
integration over A1 along one direction, integration of A2 along second direction, and only that's the physical.
So the gauge fields A that are allowed in that direction or that action are actually only the ones without any fields, right? Mm-hmm.
So the constraint, F1 equals to 0 is the constraint. And we want to know the configuration of fields that satisfy that constraint.
Yes, but where does that constraint come from?
That constraint is coming from my integration of A0, for example. So A0 is like a lot of
So this is a temporal gauge, is a gauge choice, and this will become a constraint. This is a constraint.
Yeah, so suppose you integrate out A0 first, then you have that constraint F1, 2, and then you are left with that Lagrangian A1, A5 with that constraint.
So you don't need to first impose the A0 to 0. You need to pass an equal in the ground of the A0, which leads to the little flux.
Well, okay. Maybe that's a different way to say this, but the way I say this is a gauge choice, a temporal gauge choice. I don't know whether it's the same result.
Yeah, you have to impose the constraint.
Yeah.
Which is imposed by A1.
But if A0, putting A0 to 0 is just the gauge fixing, then this can't change. Yeah.
So usually in gauge theory, if you fix gauge, then you have missing equation information. And then you have to impose by hand. Like the usual electrodynamics, A0 is a gain of constraint.
Right,
you can choose temporal gauge where A0 is 0, but you have to impose the Gaussian by hand.
Yeah,
which is imposed by same experiment. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, so I just briefly come in, maybe if there's interest, we can talk later. Let me just summarize the story. So there are other ways to derive the ground state degeneracy. As I said, without adding this term, if you look into this equations, basically you will find out X and Y are conjugate to itself. Just normal story that I do derivative of. I pick X as a coordinate, I'll find out Y is the conjugate momentum. So there's
what if M equal to 0?
Huh? Yes, when they have M0, which means I don't have a regulating term, I'm saying the second part of ground state. So I can just directly try to solve the constraint between these two coordinates of x and y, such that x and y are related to some I over k and 2 pi. If I want to have a quantum theory, I must impose some conjugation relation. And with the relation, I basically want to find out what's the wave function described by this Lagrangian. And as we know, the wave function described by this Lagrangian need to start from the Hamiltonian, which is Hamiltonian equals zero. But as I say, there is this constraint. So the point is write down the wave function with this constraint, satisfy this constraint. And one can use Fourier transform to write down, yes, this might be a, it's very quick, but I don't know what it's, let's see. You'll become a quantum mechanical problem. Just simply try to solve what's the wave function with label x and y, basically, and satisfy this constraint, and Hamiltonian is simply zero. You will say, I can write any wave function such that the h psi is equal to zero psi. But I say there is a coordinates constraint. So you, so one, one, one.
So then in the question x and y have to be operators.
Exactly.
So what does it mean to have a function of operators? A wave function depending on operators?
Okay. I think the way to say this is that if we view y as p of px, then I just need to write label by x. I shouldn't write. So I just write down psi of x, and I can say I write down the most general form, which is Fourier just using label by Fourier Fourier transformation with this n of x 2 pi n x, okay. And I can rewrite this in terms of psi of px, and then I just say psi tilde, and then I should write this in terms of p. So this is the wave function ansatz, which certainly is the most general one, and I do a Fourier transform. I should be able to write this in terms of a series of delta function, locates on nx for the p has value, will be a delta function minus some n of x. Might have some 2 pi somewhere, but let's just write down the results. There might be a factor of 2 pi, same 2 pi. Anyway.
In that case, it should just be n of x, no? Because
of I think it's. No, actually, I'm doing transformation respect to x, so I should have n. Yeah, that's right. I think 2 pi n, actually. 2 pi. Let's write 2 pi n. 2 pi n squared. 2 pi n. Okay. I think that's right. And my p basically is rated.
We have this ansatz because it has to be periodic on x.
Yes, yes. So this is simply do a Fourier transformation. And my p is related to p of x is related to y coordinates.
How do you know this is the most general solution?
Well, my CN didn't have any constraint yet. So I can basically find out, I can write any CN I like. It's just a Fourier basis
right.
With any kind of coefficient. So it's more general.
But there must be k. Right?
Huh?
There must be k.
Oh, there must be k, that's right. There must be k, exactly. Who is my k? Oh yeah, exactly. So my px actually should be ky, 2 pi ky, I think. 2 pi ky. So I can change my px to 2 pi ky, and I'll rewrite this as a ky minus n, and I can move the 2 pi out delta 2 pi and Cn. So this is the result derived in terms of y. So of course, in the quantum mechanical sense, I'm just choosing which one as basis of coordinates. I choose x first, I do Fourier transform. Now I choose y as coordinates. So alternatively, x will be a py, conjugate momentum. So this is the form. But now, as I see, if I move my n, if I move my y by let's see, y plus 1. Okay, so that's the earlier identification we have a discussion over here. So I say a move by some integer value is an identification here of a gauge field. And I change this a1, a2 to x and y. So I have this identification for y. So I need to identify this y by this way. So the identification is xy identifies x plus 1, y, and other integer as well. So this must be identified. And that will change the four things by k minus n, basically, if I want to identify this. So I, it turns out that I will shift this delta function by a position of k times. So this will make, if I want to rewrite this, it's quite clear that the Cn will identify with Cn minus or plus k. Well, this case will be minus k. So which means the coefficient of a Cn basically has a constraint, a series of constraint. And if I count the degree of freedom for this Cn, basically I only have a series of C1, C0, C1 to Ck minus 1. Basically, so if I labeled each of lame, one of them, I can basically choose maybe one of them to be non-zero and other are zero, then they are basically k kinds of wave function satisfy this. So this is an easy way of, you can also see from the way of the wave function answers, the Gauss degeneracy will be k. So, and as I say, actually, there's a third way. It's related to a recent project with Xiaogang. So I saw the way that you can actually try to derive the H theory and then think about the H theory, as I say, is the action which is derived from if you want to remove the boundary degree of freedom when you do a gauge transformation, if the manifold has a boundary, then when you glue this like a cylinder with H together, then basically there are terms well can gap out the H states. So what I'm trying to say is that originally the theory described these H states are some gapless H states, but you can gap out the theory. This is more condensed matter kind of thinking. If I have some H modes living on the boundary, and I try to glue them together, these H states can be gapped out in general if I don't have any constraint. And the way I gap out the H states basically will, in the end, related to the potential terms I add in. And the potential terms, which means the gap term add in, will have a k minimum ground states. In a sense, it's like a cosine term, basically. And there are different ways to view this H states dynamics, which can be written as some momentum modes living on this H states with winding mode, actually, and then with this gapping term. And one can count the minimum for potential as one way, or using different way with P5 is lattice. Basically, either way is fine. I'm just saying that there, you can also derive ground state agency as a K. This is the alternate way.
So I think there are N from K from potential term that get out from
there are actually different type of potential turn you can get about the edge modes. But what I'm trying to say is that the way to get about the states may have different potential terms, but there are specific type of gapping term will give you ground state degenerates k. Actually, in some sense, if you just want to get about the states, their ground state degeneracy can just be not k, like smaller than k, like 1 or something. But it depends on what's the physical way to think about you glue this edge together. For example, I think the similar story I read from Witten's papers in this group cohomology. There's a paragraph that when he tried to glue the manifold together, he will sum over all the sectors. And in a sense, the ground state degeneracy should be the one with the largest case, which is K. But in my case, if I just say I want to glue all the edge, if I want to get all the edge states, then I can pick up any term, get all the edge states, and the ground state degeneracy can be different, can be many different case. So one can really do this by an explicit example. But what I can get is that it depends on the gapping term. It's not just a simple K type of gapping term. Actually, it's one type of gapping terms, and they are different minimum in the potential, like cosine K phi. Yeah, this is interesting, but basically.
Yes, exactly.
This is one of the minimum is the ground states. Exactly. Yes, basically.
What I don't know with the minimum.
Yeah. So that's roughly. Sorry about being late. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. I basically mentioned, I didn't mention higher dimensional case, but I think the idea is roughly here.
Yeah. Why the action will look different in higher dimensions?
Huh?
The action will look a bit differently in higher dimensions?
It's similar. One can do similar story to be derived from ground state degeneracy. That's, yeah, basically.
So the first paper where ground state degeneracy calculation was done by Hodan?
Well, Hodan care different story. Hodan, I think it's Sean.
In late 80s.
Yeah, maybe. Oh. But the context is different. In condensed matter, maybe it's Xiao Gang, I think.
Hodan?
Xiao Gang, I think.
And Hodan?
Hodan did a story of one particle quantum mechanical problem.
Oh.
Leaving down a torus with the magnetic field. I don't know whether in that paper he also want to consider this transient. It's different, I think. It's a Hodan and Rizai, actually. That's a paper I'm trying to say. That's not a...
There's one particle problem mapping. I remember Frotkin, they were studied in a calculation of spin